PQRST. Hello, and once again, welcome to PQRST, Parody, Quips, Rants, and Storytelling. And Stitch was annoyed that it had been so long since he got to do the intro that he begged and begged, and I said it would be okay. So thank you for that, Stitch. He's already... Wow, he's got a green crayon, he's got a coloring book, and he is just going to town. We'll see if I can finish this podcast before he turns every page in that book green. So, hello, some interesting things, I think, to talk about today. First, a rant. I am annoyed with Ram Trucks. I'm annoyed with Ram Trucks because last week was Veterans Week, the week in which Wednesday was Veterans Day. And Ram Trucks, the Sunday before, through the week, they're still doing it now. The fact that they're doing it now makes sense. Let me explain. They have a commercial out to sell their trucks. Fine. Sell your trucks. Communism? No. Capitalism. Capitalism is a thing. It's been a blessing to my life. I have no problem trying to sell trucks. But here's where I have the problem. They are selling their trucks. They're celebrating the heroes in this commercial of The Hunger Games. Now, I understand that the last Hunger Games movie opens, I think, within about a week. You know, we can celebrate Thanksgiving by going and watching a movie. But seriously, during the week where the idea is to honor veterans, honor those who have served our country, you're like, you know, I don't know that we want to sell our trucks on the backs of veterans. So instead, let's sell them on the backs of fictional characters. Maybe in the end, that's a better thing to do. But it just got under my skin that I kept seeing this commercial celebrating our heroes, Katniss and the pretty boy that runs around with her and all those wonderful folks. We're celebrating fictional characters and their sacrifice, their fictional sacrifice, during Veterans Week. Seemed like a bit of a slap in the face to me. And since I'm mentioning it, both my dad and my grandfather served in the Air Force, and I am thankful that they did, as well as to all the veterans. I didn't say anything last week because I was too busy celebrating the Heroes of the Hunger Games, apparently, but thank you, veterans, if you're out there. Very much appreciated, because your sacrifice gives me the right to sit around and rant about things that really don't affect my life that much at all, besides being annoying. And there's going to be a lot of me talking about things that I find annoying in this podcast. That's what the episode is about today. It's about things that comics do that they really need to knock off. I will be using specific examples. I will not be using anybody's names, and situations may have been changed to protect the identities of those involved. This isn't about pointing the finger. It's about, hey, listen, this kind of behavior goes on, and I've been stupid like this. Learn from my mistakes. Learn from the mistakes of others. And when I say learning from my mistakes, I really mean that, because every time I give an example that involves someone else, I will follow it with an example from my own life. Sometime a point where I have done something stupid or arrogant or what have you, just to show that this isn't about pointing fingers. It's about things that need to change, I think is how I want to say that. So let's dive right in. I was hanging out with a comic. Comedy Works is a fantastic opportunity. If you are out there and you are a new comic and you are not yet calling the hotline every week, call the hotline every week. I don't know the number off the top of my head. It's in my phone, but I know that you can go to 5280comedy.com/openmics, and on Tuesday night, under the Tuesday listing, will be Comedy Works New Talent Night. There's the phone number. You'll listen to a long message by Deacon Gray. Every week he talks about, you know, he lists these are the comics that are up next Tuesday. If you want to be on and you're available for the following show, leave your name. The thing is, and he'll say in the message, we get over 150 calls each week on this hotline. So it takes a while to get on for your first time, but if you're patient and you keep calling in, eventually you will get on. New timers get a 2-minute set. Returning comics get a 3-minute set, and so forth. And I have heard several comics complain about this system. Listen, if you're complaining about this system, you are a moron. I'm not gonna qualify that statement. You would be a fool not to take advantage of this opportunity. I've been listening to Anthony Crawford's podcast, Talkin' Shop, and really you want to listen to that if you haven't started. That one's better than this, I'll be honest. He's a far more advanced comic than I, and the only advantage I guess you could say for this one over that is that this one doesn't have any dirty words, and sometimes that one does, and that's an issue for some people. So, but if you know what those words mean and they're not a problem for you, it's not like it's constant, it's just occasional, but some people have issue with that. Anyway, it's off topic. His podcast is fantastic, and I was listening to a recent one, and it'd be great if I could name the comic. Well, I believe Sam Talent was one of the ones talking about how great the Comedy Works process is, and there's others, but where was I going with that? Where I was going was... Oh, here's what I wanted to say, that these veteran comics will talk about Comedy Works and they'll say, listen, you do not have this kind of opportunity in New York. They don't have anything like this in LA. They don't have anything like this in Chicago, where anybody, absolutely anybody, if they're willing to call in every week and call in enough times week after week after week, it usually does take 10 to 12 weeks for your first time. And, little tip, it takes 10 to 12 weeks every time. It's not like after you've gotten on the first time, suddenly you're on a shorter list and it only takes a month or so. It's 10 to 12 weeks every time because Deacon has a fantastic system that, as far as I can tell, is very fair, and everybody, you know, is on a rotation. And when your turn comes up, you get to go up. I have not seen any evidence of favoritism. I have not seen anybody treated improperly. Near as I can tell, it is as fair and as balanced a system as you could have, and I do not envy Deacon having to deal with people that complain to him and having to just get the whole system working. But it works, and it's an excellent... Comedy Works is a well-known club, is a nationally known club. Comics, you know, are coming in. Brian Regan does stuff at Comedy Works when he's in town. Dave Chappelle loves Comedy Works. And anybody who is doing comedy in or around Denver who is willing to make the call and wait for their turn can get up and do time on stage at Comedy Works. And it's not just, if it was just the chance to be on that stage on a Tuesday night and that was the end of it, it would still be worth it. Because all you're doing is spending time making the calls and getting down there to perform. It doesn't cost you a thing. But that's not all that it is. The Talking Shop episode with Deacon Gray, I was there live at the Mutiny Information Cafe, and I got to hear about how the whole process works. And first-timers, you get a two-minute set. You're an N list, or new. Thereafter, you're on the C list, and you get 3 minutes. The point of the C list is it's a place for the hobbyists who, and as Deacon described them, there are guys who, once a year, make the calls, get on, do the same 3-minute set year after year after year. People come, you know, their friends or family, whatever, come, and that's it. So hobbyists can get up, which is cool for them. Those of us that are more serious, if you're on the C list, it means you're missing something. Maybe you're not opening well, or you're not closing well, or just something isn't quite there. I'm in the period of time this time of year, I have a cat in my lap, I'm a little distracted. This time of year, I can't call in for Tuesday nights because I'm not free on Tuesday nights. I have infant care class, and actually birthing class for the next 3 Tuesday nights, and then there's filming at elementary schools a couple Tuesday nights after that. So I'm missing for like 6 to 8 weeks the chance to call in. So my next time up won't be till probably February. But as I've been thinking about the times I've gotten up, I can think of at least 7 opportunities in the past 4 years, those 4 years that I've been doing comedy. 1 clean contest, 2 new faces contests, and all 3 of those were 5-minute opportunities. My initial 2-minute set, and then at least 3 3-minute sets. There might have been more. I could come up with 3 of them for a total of 7. And I haven't asked Deacon. He's available for coaching, and I could spend the time and the money. I'm going to try this first, and we'll see. Maybe a year from now, if I'm still on the C list, it will be time to get official help. But one of the things that I can see that I've been doing is every time I've gotten up at Comedy Works, it's been new material. And not necessarily it's the first time that anyone has heard it, but I've never repeated a joke and certainly never repeated a set on stage at Comedy Works. The advantage to that is Deacon, anyone else who's paying attention, knows that I write new stuff. There are some comics, God bless you, who I've been watching them for 3 or more years, and I can think of one in particular, I'm not going to use their name, who are doing the exact same jokes in the exact same way as they did the first time I saw them 3 years ago. The only difference is that what used to be a 4-minute set is now a 6.5-minute set because they've written some new jokes that they're jamming in between the ones that they already had. And even if it was a killer set, you got to have new stuff. You got to be writing more, moving on. The stuff you write in the first couple of years is not that great. Not for any of us. But it's not a killer set. It never has been. It's a mediocre set at best. And yet this comic keeps doing it and doing it. Every time I see them, they're doing this same set. So that's where they're at. I have shown anyone who's paying attention to Comedy Works that I'm writing new stuff. The downside, however, is I have not established that I can improve the stuff I already have. If every time I get up, I'm doing something completely new, Deacon Gray has not gotten the chance to see that I can take something and improve on it, work on it, hone it, shape it. And so my goal for Comedy Works appearances in 2016 is to pick one subject and write the best 3 minutes I can, and accepting when it's the new faces contest, assuming I can get on that, it'll be 5 minutes, but make it better. Work on it, hone it, shape it, so that, and the hope is that by the, you know, August opportunity, August or September chance to get up on Tuesday night, that it will have seen that stage 3, maybe 4 times, and there will be marked improvement. I would love to make it onto the B-list. And like I say, if this time next year I'm still a C-lister, it might be worth just sitting down with Deacon and say, what don't I have going? What am I missing? And the thing is, I can't make this happen. There's only so much that I can do. Like anything in life, I have the measure of talent that I have. That measure of talent may not be enough for the B-list. But I want to get to the B-list, and here's why. For those that did not hear the Talking Shop thing with Deacon Gray, who don't know, and because some of this was news to me, even though I've been trying to get up at Comedy Works for several years now, the C-listers, you figure your stuff out. You get to a level where they figure, okay, this guy, girl, this comic, understands how to do comedy. They put you on the B-list. Then, as Deacon said, what they're then looking for is, do they have unique comedy to them? How is their voice? I'm sure he said it better than I will, but when you're done listening to this podcast, you can go download the Talking Shop episode and hear him say it better. But B-listers, they're looking to see, is this comic have unique voice, unique jokes? And when that, by the way, you get 4 minutes as a B-lister, and then from B-list, you move up to, God willing, eventually, what's called Almost Famous. The Almost Famous folks get, I believe, 5 minutes, and they get to opportunities on weekends. I believe, if I'm remembering this correctly, they get to do maybe 5, maybe 7, anyway, more minutes. I'm nowhere near, so I didn't pay enough attention to that, but I can listen to it for my own benefit at some point. They get more time, they get more opportunities, and while they are still not paid, they are getting to get deeper into the system. And then from Almost Famous, you can then, if you're lucky, move up into the actual club rotation. And what that means is the club pays you to host a show, to MC a show, to open for Brian Regan or Dave Chappelle or Phil Palazzolo or Lewis Black or whoever. And, you know, I'm sitting here, a C-lister, who isn't sure he's ever going to be good enough to be a B-lister, but just thinking about that opportunity, what a fantastic possibility that is open to anybody if you are willing to make the call every week, you know, take 2 minutes out of your life to make a phone call, and be patient to wait for the 10 to 12 weeks it might take for you to get up. There is a pathway that you can try to walk. You may not be good enough to make it to the end, but if you're willing to do the time, make the phone calls, get better, it is possible that by the end of some years of work, you could be getting paid by Comedy Works to open for nationally known comics, with no more outlay on your part as a comic than the time and effort to make these phone calls and to get better at your craft. And like I say, the veterans are saying there's nothing like this in LA. There's nothing like this in New York or Chicago. It's not, you don't have to bring people to the shows. You don't have to pay any money to get into the shows. All it takes is a phone call. So now that I've established how that whole thing works, when I hear comics complaining about, oh, it's a click and you have to kick Deacon's butt. You have to kiss Deacon's butt to get in. Even if that was true, it's still a great opportunity, and I don't think it is. I'm pretty naive about things. The world keeps surprising me, but I'd like to think that I pay enough attention, and even if I don't, enough veteran comics are talking about it then that have nothing to gain from kissing Deacon's butt at this point, and they're saying that it's not like that. Everybody has the same opportunity. If you're good, you can move forward. If you're not, that's too bad. But to hear comics complain, oh man, you have to call in that many times? It takes like 2, maybe 3 months before you get on? Oh my gosh, you're a fool if that's what's keeping you from calling. And I have a specific fool in mind. Again, not going to use any names, comic that I was hanging out with at an open mic who was talking about the Comedy Works, and this comic was torqued because he had called in like 4 or 5 weeks and he still hadn't gotten on. And he was like, what do I have to do? Well, you have to keep calling and you have to be patient. You have to wait for your darn turn. That's what you have to do. And there was just this sense of entitlement. And this comic even told me that he got to do a show out of town. He was in Nebraska or Wyoming, someplace. He got to do a show. And so he called the hotline, and you don't talk to Deacon. You just leave your name. And the hotline even says, don't leave your number. We're not going to call you back. Just leave your name and, be in a place where you can see, either on Facebook or this voicemail, the list of who's up next. This comic apparently left a long message about, hey, listen, I just did this show. I'm fantastic. You should really advance me in the list. And on one hand, that's really dumb because, as Deacon said to us at the Talking Shop podcast recording, he doesn't listen past the name. When I call in, I say, hey, this is Will Nestle, also known as WC, calling in for next week. I don't think he even hears the calling in for next week. He just hears, okay, WC, writes down my name in whatever amazing spreadsheet thing he's got going, and deletes the message. So anybody that's talking for, after that, for 5 seconds or 5 minutes about the work they're doing, he doesn't hear you. But even if he listened to everybody's message, you would be getting nowhere by doing that. What do you think Deacon is going to say? Oh my gosh, you got to do a show out of town. Oh, you deserve to be bumped up on the list, as opposed to these other comics who are also doing shows out of town, and who are working on cruise ships, and who are busting their butts too. You obviously deserve. It's just so ridiculous. That attitude, the entitlement, the I did a show elsewhere, therefore I'm worth more than the other people that are calling in, is ridiculous, and that comic is a moron. Now, it's my turn to tell a story on me, because I'm sometimes a moron. These are going to be fun. My mother is very patient, and in this particular situation, she was very gracious. She wrote an article. She was a registered nurse for a number of years, and they had a nursing newsletter, I guess, magazine. They had a periodical published within the hospital, and she wrote an article for the periodical and asked me to type it up for her. All she asked me to do was type up her article. Now, I was, 16, 17, knew everything, as teenagers are wont to do. I had been working on writing novels for about 7 years. I had written hundreds of thousands of words trying to write a publishable novel, and I'll tell that story some other time. But I really thought I knew what I was doing when it came to writing. And so she gave me the story. Again, cannot stress enough, all she wanted me to do was type up her words. I took it upon myself to improve her story. Not just typing it up, but also typing it up better. And it's embarrassing to tell that story. Again, Mom was very gracious about it. Fortunately, she read what I had done before it was submitted, and she didn't get, as I recall, she didn't get upset with me. She just said, listen, I like the way I wrote it, so if you could type it up that way. And I changed it back to the way that she had written. And A, my version was probably not better, just because I thought it was. But two, even if it was better, I had absolutely no right to take her words and improve on them. She had not asked me to do that. I was a jackass. There's really not a better word for it. I was a total jackass to do that. And Ma, if you're listening, I appreciate how patient you were with me. And I'm sorry that I did that. So, yeah. First story about someone else, and then me. Alright, so another story about something comics do. I recently produced a show. And if you've been listening to this podcast, you know all about the show, Give My Regrets to Broadway, that was up October 7th. And it's not just me that's experiencing this, because Crawford talks about it, some other veteran comics talk about it, when they're creating shows and they're looking for comics to be on the shows, apparently comics come out of the woodwork saying, hey, you should have me on your show. And the way that the veterans are talking about it, wanted to be Katharine Hepburn for a second, that they're like, okay, if I don't know you, don't ask to be on my show, because I'm not going to bring someone up if I don't know that they could do the time. That's one of the benefits of open mics that I admit I'm currently not receiving, because I'm not getting out to open mics. Doing this podcast has some, I'm getting some of what I would get by doing open mics by doing this. One thing I'm not getting at all is meeting other comics, seeing other comics seeing me, because that is one of the pathways, and it's one of the very popular pathways for a reason, that you get out to open mics, you're getting better at your craft, other comics see you. When those comics put shows together, you could be on their list as somebody they want to work with. But to go up to, for me, to go up to Anthony Crawford and say, hey, next time you have a show, you should totally have me open for you, would be ridiculously dumb for me to do. Because he doesn't know me. He doesn't know my stuff. I mean, he has seen me a couple times, but he's not seen me come out to mics. He has not really seen that I have what he is looking for. And so all I'm doing is wasting his time. Except that's not all I'm doing. I am wasting his time. I'm also showing him that I'm unprofessional. And so it's not only not helpful, it actually is a backwards kind of motion for a comic. So anyway, I was talking about the show that I produced. I met a comic, I think it was a little over a week, call it a week and a half, before October 7th. So the end of September, I meet this comic. And we just get, you know, I mentioned the show because I was excited about it, and he was talking about stuff that he had done. And, you know, we become friends on Facebook, and then I get a Facebook message from him the next day. It said, hey, here's my number. You should call me. I have a great idea. And I had a feeling about what I would hear, and I was proved correct that I called him, and he was like, you know what would be great? This show that you've got going on. You should have me host. Yeah, so many things about that. A, how do I even begin? The October 7th show was a two-hour production at a theater. We had event insurance. We had contracts. There was so much that was in stone by then. And this guy just wants to jump in on the show. And it was a ridiculous idea. It would have been difficult to pull off, even if his offer was like, oh my gosh, yes, I would love to have you on. It would have been a challenge. Do we pay him? Do we need him to buy in so that he gets a percentage? Because that's what it worked. Me and the other two comics had each paid for a third of the show, and we're getting a third of the profits. You know, there was so much going on, it would have been very difficult to fold somebody in at that point. And that's if it was somebody that I knew well, that I liked their stuff, that I knew they would fit on the team. The fact that it was somebody I had just met, I had not, and to this day, have not seen anything that they have done. They apparently have nothing on YouTube. They keep talking about these shows that they do here and there. I've not seen anything. They might be great, but I have no knowledge of their comedy, and yet they're like, you should totally have me host your show. I'm trying to put the best face on it. I try to do that. I try to see the best in people. And I'm assuming that he was just really excited, wanted to be a part of things, and just didn't think. I'm trying not to think that he is one of these... Leeches is not a great word for it, so I won't use that. Maybe just, I don't know the short term, but these incredible self-promoters, because you've seen them, you know about them. Guys that might not be all that talented, but have such a loud voice that they keep getting stage time, whatever that stage might be. I mean, I wake? Wow, the English language is hard. I make videos for a living, and I have seen the work of other videographers. And the fun thing about what I do for a living, it's a two-sided coin. It is very simple nowadays to get a camera, get a microphone, get a couple lights, get a computer with an editing system. There's not that many steps in order to say, I'm a videographer, and be able to produce videos. Honestly, if you have an iPhone and an iMac, you're pretty much able to call yourself a videographer. So the upside is it's easy enough, whereas back in the 50s, the 60s, you had to have cameras the size of, you know, mobile homes. Now I have cameras that I can fit three of them in a bag about the size of a bread box. Their cameras are nice and small now. The downside, the flip side, is much like what happened with photography when Instamatic cameras were invented. Suddenly everybody can call themselves a videographer. And every client I have has a horror story about videographers who did not produce anything, or it took them 6 months, or they refused to give a copy to the client that hired them, or things that are just absolutely ridiculous, like your video and your audio being 8 to 10 seconds out of sync. I mean, if it's 8 frames out of sync, it's majorly wrong. If it's 8 to 10 seconds, I mean, it's like seeing an explosion and then waiting for 8 seconds and then suddenly hearing the sound of the explosion. That's what I'm talking about. There are guys getting work that are terrible in any field, probably. Hopefully not like doctoring or airline piloting, but in a lot of fields, there are videographers, there are car salesmen, there are stand-up comics. There are people who get opportunities because they're great promoters, even if they can't actually back up what they do. And that sucks because it makes it harder for videographers. Now that, you know, when I approach clients, it's one thing when people are referred to me, which happens a lot now. Opportunities are coming and falling into my lap. I don't have to go after them nearly as much. But on the rare occasions where I meet someone and say, hey, you know, I do video, would you like? It's harder to work for someone who's had a bad experience than to get in with someone that's never had a videographer at all. Because all they know is, well, we hired this guy and he did crap work, so why would we want you? The stand-up comics out there who are shameless self-promoters, especially if you're not that great, please just be honest about the level you're working at. I'm a 3-year comic and I know that. And arguably, this whole October 7th show was a bit of a stretch, but the October 7th show was God's idea, not mine, and so I trusted that he would help me in the ways that I needed help, and the show went well. But for me to say, all right, I've done an hour-long show, now I should start getting on cruise ships, I should start, I'm not ready for things like that yet, and I know I'm not. And to be calling, I don't know, Anthony Crawford and saying, hey, you should have me on your show, even if I could say, hey, you know, listen, I can prove it, watch, here's a video. That doesn't prove what I can do. That I did it once in a theater setting where probably more than half the crowd there wanted to like me because they liked me before they showed up for the show. It doesn't prove anything. And I at least have that. This guy that wanted to host that same show who I met, and out of nowhere he's thinking he should host the show. As I said, I have never seen him tell one joke. And I have no idea if he knows what he's doing. So guys that are doing that, you're hurting the rest of us because, well, you're hurting yourselves because the only thing that this guy showed me is that I probably don't want to work with him. I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt. If someday I can actually see a set of his, I would try to judge him based on that set. But right now, you say, hey, what do you think about this comic? I'll be like, well, I don't think I want to work with him. Given my first impression, they don't seem like somebody that I could trust to be good on a team. And so he hurt himself by doing that, and it hurts the community in general, because the guys that do that and get stage time because producers are desperate or because producers don't know any better, whatever. Great, you show up to a show. How many people out there who are listening to me, and again, thank you so much for being out there listening to me, how many of you have gone to see a show and have had to sit through 5 or 10 or 30 minutes of somebody who wasn't funny? And I don't mean they were telling jokes that weren't your style. That happens. There are guys that I don't care for that are very funny. No, I just mean somebody who isn't funny to anybody, who just thinks they're funny. We've all seen that. We've all sat through that. And it makes us all a little less likely to go to a comedy show next time we have a chance. So it's hurting all of us that are trying to do this. If you're out there and you know I'm talking to you, stop shamelessly self-promoting yourself. There is a time and a place to put your shingle out, yes. Know when that time is. And it's when you have something to offer and you can show that you have something to offer and that you're actually working at a higher level. So, you know, write some jokes. Get to the open mics. It's ironic for me to say that because I'm not doing open mics, but there's some circumstances that are making that difficult. But get out there in ways that you can. You know, call into the Comedy Works hotline. You know, get your opportunities. But don't expect people to put you on shows until you have something to offer. And just because you think you have something to offer, ask 5 people that you trust, that you know will be honest with you. If all 5 of them say you have something you can offer, then maybe you're getting somewhere. But anyway, it's time for me to tell a story on me. I'm going to save this story for something in a minute. Just the sense of entitlement, I guess. This is not a long story. It's kind of a dumb example, I guess, but it came to mind. I'll tell 2 short stories on myself. And in both cases, they were me getting really focused on an idea to the point that I forgot about just normal social interactions and respecting other people. One is, I can remember, I'm probably 10, maybe 12, was thinking about something, had walked up to a neighbor's house a couple blocks away, block and a half, whatever, and I don't even remember what I wanted, to ask them if they would buy candy bars that I was selling for school, or was somebody home that I wanted to hang out with. I don't know what it was, but I do remember that I just opened their door, and they were gracious about it, much like my mom was with the whole writing fiasco, but to just, you know, open the door and walk into somebody's house that's, it's not your house and it's not your family, they're like, oh, hi, you know, oh, what can we do for you? But, you know, whatever I was thinking about, I was thinking real hard about it because I forgot the general social convention of knocking and being invited in. Like I say, a short story, but that's how focused I can get. And another example of that, and this one actually hurt somebody's feelings. Ma used to come in and wake us up, you know, when it was time for school. And this was one morning where I'd woken up early, and I had some money coming to me because of snow shoveling or birthday money. I don't know what it was, but I had lain in bed for half an hour thinking about the soon coming trip to Target and how many Game Boy games I could buy. And my mom came in to say good morning, and the first thing out of my mouth was, so I think that when we go to Target, I can buy like 3 different games. Yeah, that's not generally the way you should greet your mother when she comes to wake you up in the morning. It's kind of funny now, but at the time, mom was a little hurt because... And I had not meant to hurt her. I did not mean to hurt her. I was just really focused on myself and my own stuff. But, yeah. So, you know, even as I talk about other people feeling entitled or doing things that are foolish, I am not immune to being a moron myself. Here's another one. Story I'm telling on someone else. Again, with no names, I used to work at a TV station, and several times a week we would do a live show. Occasionally, the occasional part is that live show would sometimes feature comics, and comics who had an upcoming show. And I very clearly remember one, it was a group of three comics. They were together to do a show, something like the Blue Collar Comedy Tour, although if I told you the tour's name or the comics involved, you probably had not heard of any of them. But what I specifically remember from this interview, there were three comics, and they had, say, a 10-minute interview. One of the three comics, who was not the headliner or the show producer, I believe it was the feature comic, so there's an opener, a feature, the headliner, so the guy in the middle, he had a very large personality, which is cool, you know, and that's nothing wrong with that. If it was a 10-minute interview, he talked for probably 8 minutes, maybe 8.5. And there were three people in the interview, each of whom, you know, had their own comic thing, and then there was the show itself to talk about. So arguably there's four things going on, and for this guy to take four-fifths of the interview and make it about himself, I've never forgotten that, because it was just, it's like, you know, there's a third guy here. The poor opener, opener feature, headliner, poor opener got to introduce himself and answer like one question, and then the feature guy just ran with the interview, and the opener never got a chance to say anything else. And at the end of the interview, there, as sometimes happens on live TV, we got to the end of the interview a little early, and there was 10 seconds before we cut to commercial or the end of the show or whatever it was. And so the host was like, anything else to say? And this same big personality comic, I really specifically remember this, they had a radio weekly radio show or a blog or something, and they were like, oh, hey, and by the way, check out this. And they did some self-promoting. And I remember walking away from the interview thinking, those guys were there to promote a show that they're all on, and yet the whole interview ended up being about this guy, especially that end part. You know, he wasn't even talking about the show. The whole reason they were there to promote, he was talking about his own stuff. And if I run into somebody like that now, it's kind of like the guy that thought he should host the show that we had put together in October. I see somebody doing that, and again, it's like, wow, this is a person I really don't know that I want to work with. It's a terrible cliche that there's no I in the word team, but it's a cliche for a reason. If I'm a member of a team and I'm only concerned with promoting myself, I am not being a good part of the team. And the whole team suffers. Everybody suffers. I even suffer. You got to work together if you're pulling towards a common goal. If, you know, I put on a show with, well, I did put on a show in October. It was me and two other guys. So if the three of us are harnessed to this plow that has the show written across it, and two of us are pulling north and one person's trying to pull east, we are not going to get very far. Got to pull together. You got to be going in the same direction. So I see somebody that is about themselves and doesn't necessarily work too well as part of a team. And, a little check mark goes by their name saying, oh, you know, next time I'm producing a show, I don't care how funny they are. That is a mark against them. And I would choose somebody less funny but more able to be part of a team than somebody like that. Another example, I run into people occasionally. I used to be on a worship team. And actually, I can tell on myself and with this one. When I first started, the first time I got on a worship team, I had wanted to for years to be on the team because I thought if I could get on the worship team, then people will like me. And at 15, I was desperate to find something I could do where I would be accepted, popular, not even popular, just accepted, you know, just to belong to the group around me, feel like I was part, you know, like I had the right to be a human being. I had problems. But if I could get on the worship team, then, you know, I could be accepted. I could matter. And finally got on the worship team. And I'm sure if you asked the leaders at the time, Dave and Tanya Hodel, name drop, boom, for Dave and Tanya Hodel. They were very patient. If you'd asked them, they probably would agree that at the time, I was probably not the best team member. I didn't want to be arrogant or self-serving, but I was more, as I thought about it, I was more about, you know, can I get a solo in this song? Can I do the fun harmony part in this song? More than how can I add to the team? And it's an interesting thing to think about, because I ran into a guy recently who has done some praise and worship in the past, and he's very musical, he's musically gifted, and he was talking about being on a team and how he was playing the instrument he was playing. Let's say it was the guitar. I don't even remember. But whatever instrument it was, and we'll say it was the guitar. Maybe it was the triangle. We'll say it was the guitar. He wanted to play really fun riffs and dink around and, you know, have a lot of fun with it. And the worship leader wanted him to just play basic chords. And he's sitting there telling me, man, I quit that team. What was that leader's problem? He wanted me to play basic chords? Come on, I can do so much more than that. And I didn't say anything because, you know, there's no point in talking to someone who can't hear you. But I'm sitting there going, it's probably a good thing you quit the team before they had to fire you from the team. Because, once again, this musical friend was showing that they did not have the understanding of what it means to be part of a team. You know, if you're going to be on a team, worship team, comedy team, whatever team, you need to do what best serves the team, not what makes you look best. And if that means playing basic, uninteresting chords, because those basic chords will better serve what the team is doing, then that's what you do. If you can't do that, it's better you not be on the team. So you can go off, be a solo performer, and do whatever you want. I've had that attitude in the past. And it's funny just to think about that, because I'm on a team now. I'm the emergency backup pianist at Waterstone Community Church. And, you know, occasionally the worship leader will apologize because he's having me do something that's not very interesting. You know, I'm just playing basic chords. I could not care less. I'm not up there to be seen or to, hey, look at me. I wasn't even planning on being on the team. I just noticed after a while that there's just one guy that plays the keyboards, and if he was, you know, on vacation, nobody was up there. And I thought, well, I can play piano, I might as well offer. So it's an honor when I get to play, and I don't need to stand out. I've finally gotten to the place where most of the time I'm happy to do what serves the team. And I can recognize, you know, it was like being in the Canto Deo choir that I was last year. I was just one tenor voice among, you know, half a dozen, and just one voice in 50 or 60. But my voice added a little bit that needed to be added. And if I didn't get to stand out to where someone in the audience could hear my voice separately from everyone else's, so what? I got to do my part to make things better. And it was a good experience. And I don't know, I guess I'm glad that, and as I'm sitting here saying this, the chance that I will be not a great team member probably is going to come up within the next couple of months, if not weeks, if not hours. But I like to think that I'm getting more mature and getting to the point where I don't have to stand out, that I can play a part, and if it makes things better, then anyway, I think I'm a better team member. And that's what I want to say about, you know, comics. If you can't play well with the team, then do your own stuff. Do a solo act. That's fine. There's room for that. But if you're going to be on a team, think about the team. Don't just promote yourself. Let's see. I think I just have one more thing. I do have one more thing. And this one is... yeah, I'm going to say it. And I was talking about something that happened October 7th. There were three of us comics. And the... One of the comics, and if you were at the show, you'll know who I'm talking about, but it doesn't matter who. This was done, I'm sure, with the best of intentions. I'm just calling out the behavior, not trying to bring down any specific person. But one of the comics, during their set, near the end of the set, they were like, hey, and if you like what you're hearing, I have merchandise. I have CDs to sell, and I'll be selling them afterwards. Now, I have no problem with comics having merchandise. You know, you got to make money somehow, and this particular comic is trying to make a living as a comic, which is a very difficult thing to do. So, it's cool. I'm glad he has merch. The problem was, he didn't ask me if it was okay. I was the producer of the show. I was the one that put everything together. And he never checked in with me about merchandise. And so, that's not okay. I'm sure this comic had the best of intentions. If he'd thought about it, he would have cleared it with me. You know, I don't think he was trying to pull a fast one. But listen, if you're going to do something like that, clear it with whoever's in charge of the show. Just have the respect to say, hey, listen, I wanted to do this, this okay. The whole, it's better to ask for forgiveness than permission, I don't buy that. You know, that's a respect thing for me. So I would have liked him to have the respect for me to check and see if it was okay. And not only because just the respect issue, but also there was a possible legal issue. I'm not sure that we were okay to sell merchandise. This is a theater. We had a signed contract. We had event insurance. There was paperwork out the yin yang with this. And so, you know, we are on City of Lakewood property. It's a government building. I don't know if him selling stuff was completely legal. I also don't know if it went against theater policy. You know, they're the ones that are trying to make some money on the show. So there were several reasons why that was kind of a... It was not an okay thing to do. At least it was not an okay thing to be a surprise. So anyway, if that comic hears this, I'm not trying to come down on you. I'm just saying next time you're on a show with somebody, maybe ask if it's okay to sell merchandise rather than just going ahead and doing it. Just respect is nice. And one final story, and this one's on me, and again, it has to do with respect. Oh, this one's embarrassing. This was not me trying to be disrespectful. This was me just being an idiot. I'm very naive about social things and about social interactions, and maybe it's something that person just has to be around comedy long enough to realize, or maybe I'm just dumb, but female comics have a harder time getting respect than male comics. I guess it's that glass ceiling again. Females aren't paid the same as men in similar jobs, that sort of thing goes on. Well, apparently in the comedy world, females are sometimes considered, maybe even often considered, second-class citizens, which sucks. Okay, if a person is funny, they're funny, regardless of their gender, regardless of their race, regardless of their age. Funny is funny, and anyone that thinks that female comics shouldn't be allowed to tell jokes is an idiot, is a bigoted moron. So what I'm about to say, this was not bigotry. Please, this was not... I'm an idiot, that's all. I was in the green room at Comedy Works waiting for one of my three-minute sets, and at the time that I made this dumb statement, there were like six of us guys in there, and name drop, boom! Jill Tassi, the wonderful and very funny Jill Tassi, walked in, because she was on that night also, and I said, just trying to make a joke, hey, no girls allowed. Now, at you know, some random party or a bus stop or something where it doesn't matter what gender you are, maybe that could be construed as just a dumb joke. As, hey, it's all guys in here, now there's a girl coming in. I'm going to pretend I'm, you know, 13 and this is my clubhouse. That's really all I was going for. I was not trying to be bigoted. And Jill was cool about it. I don't know that anybody laughed because it wasn't that funny, but she, you know, smirked, whatever, and went to talk to the person she was going to talk to, and the moment passed. And I would not even be telling the story, would not even have remembered that moment, except Deacon Gray, very graciously, 20 minutes later, caught me in the hallway and said, listen, that wasn't cool. You know, female comics have a hard time in this industry, and for you to say that... And I was like, oh, crap. I had not seen it through that lens. Because, as we've established, sometimes I'm just stupid, and it was just a stupid moment. And so I'm very thankful that Deacon kindly pulled me aside and quietly, not in front of anybody else, just quietly said, listen, you messed that up. And so it shined a light on what I had done that I hadn't seen, and I was able to go to Jill and say, wow, I'm an idiot, I'm sorry, and she was cool about it. And so the moment passed, but... you know, I've been talking about respect, I've been talking about a lot of things comics do, and I just cannot state enough that I do dumb things too, and I'm working on this. And I want to respect people. I want to not have a sense of entitlement. I want to work for what I get. All these things I say, comics don't do this, I'm talking to myself too. But we learn as we go. So I think that'll do it for the podcast. I don't have anything else on my list of, hey, don't do this. So I will, as always, or as almost always anyway, leave you with a parody song. It's one I've been thinking about, a Simon and Garfunkel parody about the hopes to one day be on a certain television show. And yeah, Back in a moment. So like I said, this is a bit of a song about someday being on TV. Standing on an open mic stage like I'm in some kind of gilded birdcage. Gonna be up here for quite a while, hope to get a laugh, at least a smile. But you folks don't know that all the while I'm dreaming about that New York mile. Conan bound, I wish I was Conan bound. That red-haired host so charming, Andy Richter's kind of alarming, Steve Carell's so funny, and I'd really like to meet him. Every day's an endless stream of knock-knock jokes and one-man scenes. And each gag sounds the same to me, the stuff is really not funny. And when I turn around, I see my comic up on my TV. Conan bound, I wish I was Conan bound. That red-haired host so charming, Andy Richter's kind of alarming, Jack Black's annoying, and yet I'd still like to meet him. Tonight I'll tell my jokes again, I'll stand up there and I'll pretend. I'll act like I'm falling off a log, do my impression of Kermit the Frog. Tomorrow I'll write in my blog, I still feel like I'm in a fog. Conan bound, I wish I was Conan bound, yeah, yeah. That red-haired host so charming, Andy Richter's kind of alarming, Brad Pitt's a pretty good actor if you think about it and look at his full body of work, and I'd like to meet him. I'd like to meet him. And that's the podcast for this week. Conan Bound works a lot better with Homeward Bound than, say, Fallon Bound or Colbert Bound. But either way, if anyone's out there and they want to put somebody on TV who has pretty much exactly 3 years of stand-up experience, well, you know where to reach me. In the meantime, wherever you are, whatever stage you have today, own that stage. And we'll see you next week.